You ever watch this guy on television?
You all were not telling the truth, and you should not be trusted.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, thank you for what you did for your country tonight.
Be offended with the Democratic whip, not House Republicans.
Like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
Welcome to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. Let's talk about the news. A lot of news coming out of the United States Department of Justice. Let's start with Durham. You'll remember some 18 months ago, Bill Barr announced that John Durham would be taking the lead in an investigation to review the origins of the Trump-Russia investigation, the potential criminal activity associated with trying to frame a president, alter evidence before a secret court, continue to renew an application to spy on Americans despite having the knowledge at the Department of Justice that the basis, that the underlying reason for that spying was flawed, that it was based on the work of Christopher Steele, who the FBI knew to be a known liar, and analysis of Carter Page, who was freely working with the FBI, giving them information regarding his meetings with Russians. It was all so fake. It was all just an effort to try to frame the president, undermine the presidency, and empower the deep state. I think people should go to jail for that crime against our country. But despite the many months of investigation, we haven't seen anything from John Durham in the nature of indictments or even his scope of work. You'll remember when Robert Mueller was appointed special counsel, subpoenas were flying out, Roger Stone was getting arrested by an amphibious assault SWAT team, you had Paul Manafort getting drugged before courts because of tax crimes that he'd allegedly committed back in the 1980s. And here you have the Durham investigation, not resulting here at the conclusion of the president's first term with indictments or even a description of what he's been doing, but just a memo from Bill Barr converting him from an investigator to a special counsel on this matter. It's a little disappointing for me. I mean, it kind of feels like we're ending where they started. I mean, they began the Trump presidency by appointing a special counsel to go after Trump, his family, his campaign team, his supporters. And yet here we are, you know, potentially at the conclusion of the Trump presidency, and only now we're getting to the point where they started. If we couldn't get results and accountability during the Trump presidency regarding the framing of Donald Trump, we're very unlikely to get results after the Trump presidency regarding the framing of Donald Trump. That's why I'm disappointed in the decision. I would have liked to have seen more, and it's shocking, really, that we find ourselves in this moment where the United States Department of Justice spent more time investigating Donald Trump for fake allegations against him than they spent investigating the real allegations of voter fraud in this election. And that brings us to the next big piece of news out of the Department of Justice, Attorney General Bill Barr saying that he's got no evidence of widespread voter fraud that could have impacted the outcome of the 2020 election. Here's my hot take. If your house gets robbed because the alarm system malfunctioned, maybe you shouldn't exclusively trust the alarm company to catch the thief. That's kind of what happened here. And that's not a full indictment of all people associated with the DOJ. There are actually some good folks in U.S. attorney offices around the country. There are some good ones here in Florida who were really focused on ensuring that in the registration process on the front end, in the ballot request process on the front end, in the mail out of ballots, in the management of the retrieval of those ballots, that there were not crimes being committed. Because after the fact, it's very hard to put Humpty Dumpty back together again and figure out who committed what crimes, what polluted ballots are commingled with legitimate ballots. And so you can show all of the affidavits and all of the claims, but it's very difficult to obtain the relief that the Trump campaign is requesting after the fact. That's why this was such a failure on the Department of Justice on the front end. Not everywhere. You know, we forget in most places in this country, we ran clean elections. It was basically in four cities: Milwaukee, Detroit, Atlanta, and Philadelphia. And in those four places, there was mechanized ballot fraud, and there was not sufficient attention from the Department of Justice on the impact of that fraud, of that ballot laundering. And so, lo and behold, after the fact, they're unable to reconstruct the elements of this criminal activity and make a finding. I do not believe that that is some blessing upon the 2020 election. I do not believe that absolves the fact that you had people voting in more than one state, you had dead people voting, you had people voting who had already filled out a change of address form. Matt Brainerd is one of the leading minds at the Voter Integrity Project. He was on the Lou Dobbs program and I think laid out the specificity of the fraud, the specific voters involved. Take a listen to the interview with Matt Brainerd and Lou Dobbs.
Tell us what you gave them that you think may be most helpful to them to assure integrity in this election.
Well, what we're giving them is we're giving to every of our target states, attorney generals, the legislatures, governors, and secretaries of state is hard evidence of potentially illegal ballots cast in those states. And I'm not sending them charts or line graphs or speculation about what may or might not have happened. I send them the names, addresses, phone numbers, dates of birth, and voter record numbers of people who either had ballots cast in their name and said they didn't, or who did cast ballots they shouldn't have because they didn't meet residency requirements, or cast ballots in multiple states. And what we found is in several key states, specifically Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona, the number of these ballots, individual voters that we've identified who cast early and absentee ballots in these states, surpassed the margin of victory. Which means that nobody can honestly say for certain that Joe Biden actually won the election just on the basis of our data alone. Now, other people have done other analyses, which I think has some validity, and others have taken our data and projected it to like a larger universe to come up with even more substantial numbers. But just on the people we've identified ourselves, we believe that that surpasses the margin of victory in enough states to have denied Joe Biden a win in the Electoral College. Without those three states, this election would have gone to the U.S. House of Representatives and President Trump would have been reelected. So we cannot say with confidence that Joe Biden's the deserved winner of the election based solely on the data that we've uncovered.
Yeah.
President Trump has just taken his strongest stance yet against censorship on the internet. We've covered extensively how Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act gives large digital platforms the ability to avoid the liabilities that would append to this podcast, that would append to cable news station or your local newspaper or local network, a news show. President Trump tweeting, Section 230, which is a liability shield gift from the U.S. to big tech, only the companies in America that have it, corporate welfare, is a serious threat to our national security and election integrity. Our country can never be safe and secure if we allow it to stand. Therefore, if the very dangerous and unfair Section 230 is not completely terminated as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, I will be forced to unequivocally veto the bill when sent to the very beautiful Resolute desk. Take back America now. Thank you. Here's my hot take. I support the president in his desire to repeal Section 230. I think it would be excellent to include that repeal in the National Defense Authorization Act that we are sending the president. There's a lot in that National Defense Authorization Act that I like. Pay increases for troops, benefits for surviving spouses, ensuring that we've got the weapons to vanquish our enemies downrange whenever we need to. There's also a lot I don't like. There's a piece in The Intercept that Glenn Greenwald just tweeted out about the work that I did with some progressives to try to advance the America First foreign policy agenda supported by President Trump. And we faced a lot of resistance from the defense contractor-funded Democrats and, of course, Liz Cheney and the War Hawk Republicans. And so the Defense Authorization Act now has got good and bad in it. It would definitely be an improved piece of legislation if the president gets his way and we can get a repeal of Section 230 in that bill. And that is exactly what I'll be fighting for in the Congress. Former President Barack Obama says that liberals lose a substantial portion of the country with snappy slogans like defund the police. In an interview with Axios, the former president said that progressives should try to accomplish their policy goals without these types of slogans that turn off a great deal of the country. Here's my hot take. It's not the slogan defund the police that bothers me. It is the objective to defund the police that bothers me. And by the way, with what we see from Democrats, particularly in the House of Representatives, that's exactly what they're trying to do. When they strip police of their immunities, when they make it harder for police to acquire body protection, personal protection for the incredibly difficult jobs they have, they're doing everything they can to keep that police officer in the car rather than encouraging proactive policing. So whether it's the slogan or the objective or the policies and bills, whether it's the appropriations made or the signals sent, it is very clear to the country. The Democrats are against the police. The Republicans are for the police. It seems like the only law enforcement that the Democrats are for are some of the highly politicized folks who've cycled in and out of the FBI and the Department of Justice, who've been criticized roundly by Inspector General's reports, and who still should face consequences. When the Electoral College results are sent to the United States Congress for review by a joint session of the Congress, we have the opportunity to object to any state's slate of electors. That objection must be in writing. It must be submitted by at least one member of the House of Representatives and at least one member of the Senate, and it would result in a two-hour debate in each chamber regarding the legitimacy of those electors sent by a particular state. So this doesn't mean challenging the entire national election. It doesn't mean challenging every state or every circumstance. It means isolating some of those places where we remain concerned about voter registration irregularities, the accounting of the ballots cast to the particular number of people in a precinct. I had an opportunity to discuss this phenomenon and the potential for an objection in the Electoral College and the certification process before the Congress on Newsmax last evening with Spicer and Co. Take a listen.
Newsmax has still not called this race. We're waiting for the president to exhaust his challenges in the states. But I just want to be clear that, I mean, if you look at it objectively, you can say that the number of states that have certified their electors favors Joe Biden getting 270. But you have been quoted in this story that I saw that I think was fascinating in Politico that says how Trump's Hill allies could take one last shot to overturn the election. Nothing is off the table, said Congressman Matt Gaetz. I think this is fascinating. Walk me through what you're thinking, what the strategy is, and how real this is.
Just today, I've talked to Republicans in the House of Representatives, and I've also talked to Republicans in the United States Senate. And there is an interest in looking into these irregularities and presenting them to force a debate in the Congress about whether or not to certify these, or accept, I should say, these states' electors. Every state's electors are individually subject to objection, as you correctly pointed out to top off the show. And if we don't see, I think, some explanation for why in places there is not a match with the number of people who voted and the people who are on the voter rolls, if we see these voter registration anomalies continue, I think it would be worthy of a debate. So if it were to be the case that members of the House and a member of the Senate were to offer that objection, it would require a two-hour debate about that state's process and about the validity of the electors that they have sent. And I think the nation would survive that, Sean. I think somehow the union would hold if we took the opportunity to isolate the irregularities in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin in particular, and to lay that bare before the nation so that at a minimum, we ensure that this type of erosion of election integrity never happens again.
In Los Angeles County, California, now they even want to ban outdoor dining, gutter dining, as I call it. You see, in the state of Florida, we believe that human beings ought to have the choice to go inside and enjoy a meal if they exercise that choice. In LA County, first they threw everybody out next to the gutters. Now they even want to close that outdoor dining, but they are facing some resistance. The Beverly Hills City Council unanimously votes to oppose the LA County dining ban. I guess the Woketopians in Beverly Hills have had enough. They want to be able to have their meals. They want to be able to have them at restaurants. I just think this is all so crazy. I mean, I look at a lot of these outdoor dining setups, and basically you've got a nice, cozy, wonderful restaurant. And then outside, they'll go set up a tent, put heaters inside of it, stick everybody in the tent, and then convince themselves and try to convince you that somehow everything is safer as a consequence. People need to eat. They need to have the choice to do it inside. I stand with the City Council of Beverly Hills, California, and against the LA County mandate to stop dining of any kind, indoor, outdoor, or otherwise. And, you know, again, I cannot stress this enough. These lockdowns hurt blue-collar people the most. They hurt people that live month to month, paycheck to paycheck, and the worst impacts of this coronavirus will undoubtedly come from the government decisions to lock down, to limit choice, and to harm our country. There is no lockdown strong enough to hold back the American spirit. That spirit must prevail, and it must be enduring. Let us go to eat. Let us do it inside or outside at our choosing. This week, marijuana reform is on the agenda in the House of Representatives. The MORE Act will pass the House on Friday. It will not even get a hearing in the Senate, so it won't become law. It will largely be a messaging bill, a measuring stick for where the marijuana reform movement currently stands, particularly in the House of Representatives. If you want to check out the specifics of the MORE Act, I've noted that episode 80 of the podcast goes through the substantive provisions of the bill, the pros and cons, and some of the committee debate. But if you want further reading on where the marijuana reform movement stands, there is a piece in a Bloomberg Opinion, "Can Marijuana Help Biden Heal a Divided Nation?" And of course, the piece starts with the premise that Biden is going to be the president. It reads, "After more states have legalized pot, support at the federal level is what is needed to make cannabis investors cheer again, and now it's possible." Now, the piece talks about the five states in this last election that approved ballot measures for marijuana reform. They include Arizona, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, and South Dakota. So pretty much a cross-section. You get a purple state in Arizona, some pretty red states in Mississippi, South Dakota, Montana, and then even a blue state in there, New Jersey, modernizing their cannabis programs. And it appears, based on the results from the people, that when marijuana initiatives are on the ballot in this country, they typically pass. And so whether or not marijuana is that which could help Biden heal a divided nation, I think is an outstanding question. But check it out in the Bloomberg Opinion piece we will be posting. Thanks for listening to Hot Takes. I'm Congressman Matt Gaetz. This podcast is written, produced, and directed by a team that includes myself and Luke Ball and Joel Valdez from our communications team. Make sure to subscribe, to like, to review on your podcast listening platform of choice, and join us tomorrow for more Hot Takes.